This is Feng Shui Radio. Las mejores noticias en metafísica china.
Hola, buenos días. Estamos en una nueva edición de Feng Shui Radio. Hoy tenemos a Steven Skinner y es una de las presentaciones que nos va a gustar más porque es un personaje, escribió muchos libros y tiene un conocimiento de Feng Shui y de magia que es bastante impresionante. Así que le damos la bienvenida. Hello.
Hi, Alex. Yeah, it's true. I have written many books because I've been involved with Feng Shui for a long time, since 1976 when I first learned it in Hong Kong from one of the old Chinese masters there.
Who was your master? I'm curious.
Master Wu.
Master Wu, okay. And he's from any lineage or...?
He has passed away a long time back. But basically, he was an old-style master. He would take me and show me where he'd be pegging out the lines in the earth. He was doing large buildings, so he would do the initial feng shui on those. The story about how we met is quite interesting, if you would like to hear it. I have a good Chinese friend who's a barrister, and we flat shared in London. He moved out to Hong Kong to set up his practice, and it didn't go very well. And so we went up Temple Street in Hong Kong. We found one of the street masters there who came back, did his feng shui. 10 days later, he started to get big jobs. Wow. So I was impressed because... my background, of course, is as a Westerner, scientifically trained. I'd actually been a lecturer in geography in Sydney. So geography is a very down-to-earth thing, and I could see that this guy was very much down-to-earth, and he got results. So I asked him, well, hey, could you teach me? He said, no, I can't teach you. So, but we got to be friends, and we went out drinking in the brandy bars in Wan Chai in Hong Kong. One night when he was very drunk, he said, you know what I hate most in the whole world is Western architects. And I said, why? He said, well, I mark out the feng shui, I explain where the water should go, I show where the front entrance should be. And then the architects, they come along with a bulldozer and they just knock over my pegs and they knock over things and they just don't do it. And then I go back to the owner of the plan and I say the feng shui hasn't been done properly. And so it causes problems. So because I was a geography lecturer, I knew how to use surveying equipment. So I said to him, introduce me to the next site owner and let me go down to the site. And when you've pegged it out, I will measure it and transfer it exactly to the architect's plans. That way the owner will know what should be done.
Yeah.
He thought that's a good idea. So we did that a few times, and I said, but the deal is you have to teach me real feng shui in exchange. So I helped him with Western architects, and we worked together. And so I picked up a lot of field stuff. I didn't pick up much theory. I said to him, well, what's the theory behind this? And he said, my master and my master's master, they just taught us what to do, not why to do.
Not why to do.
So it was only years later when I started reading some of the Chinese classics that I began to see the why. But I already got the how to do. So that was, I learned feng shui back to front. Everybody else learns it in a classroom. They learn the why and then maybe they learn the how. So that's my background.
Oh, that's really good, though.
And another coincidence, of course, is that the old name for feng shui back in the 2000 years ago was usually referred to as di li. And di li is the modern Chinese name for geography. So when we were sitting in this brandy bar, I said, what do you do? He said, I'm a di li master. So I knew just enough Chinese, and I said, well, I teach di li as well, because I'm a geography master. And we both thought that was pretty amazing. So after that, we got on pretty well.
You find a point of coincidence.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, feng shui is deeply embedded in the geography of the land. You've got to know where the rivers are, where the mountains are, where the water mouth is. Mm-hmm. For external, for Sanhe, it's very geographical. So immediately, despite my skeptical Western mind, mm-hmm. I found it was so comfortable to do and learn. Mm-hmm. So that's where I got started. And I wrote my first book in 1976 on feng shui. And that's been around for a long time. And I started practicing feng shui and doing it for others. And that's where it all started.
Wow. Okay, question is, you learn feng shui from the Chinese master. And then you cultivate your soul, exploring, reading classics, going to classes too. Do you practice that?
Okay, just to correct one thing,
yep.
I have never been to a class because when I started learning feng shui back in the mid-70s, there were no classes, not in English. I can read classical Chinese, but I can't speak Chinese because I think my ears just cannot get the tone differences. So the answer is field research and things after that. And then I've accumulated a dossier of cases, which is where a lot of the information actually comes from. In my busiest year, I did 80 clients in 1 year. Nowadays, I'm getting a little bit older. I'm doing less client work.
Only the best clients.
Well, no, only my... I don't take new clients anymore. Mm-hmm. I have repeat business from old clients located in Thailand, in Singapore, in Malaysia. I had one or two clients in America, but the flight is just not worth the effort. It's just too far away.
Too far, yeah.
And I enjoy living in Asia. I moved to Asia in 2003. Mm-hmm. And actually, the quality of life is much better than London, which is where I was living, or Sydney, which is where I was born.
I agree.
Selection.
At least the weather is better.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's summer all year round. What could be better than that?
I know.
The local Chinese in Singapore say, oh, we'd love to see snow. We'd love to have different seasons. And I tell them, yeah, just as a tourist you would, but after that you don't really want to live there.
Going to ski is nice.
Yes.
1 week.
Yes, exactly.
Not a month.
So I keep my old clients, the repeat business, check the feng shui each year, and I'm on retainer from some clients so that when they buy a new building or they have a new business venture, I will do that. And occasionally I'll work with other consultants on the bigger projects. One or two just came up recently. But that's fairly demanding work, and so I'm doing less and less as the years go on. Writing books, putting the information into print so it'll survive, I like to do. I teach classes probably one a year.
What do you teach?
I teach feng shui classes. Flying Star, I've taught Flying Star in Russia. I've taught Flying Star in Philippines. But I also like to teach Sanhe, because as a geographer, this is the closest to my heart.
This is close to your...
Yeah, I can look at a landscape and I can understand how the pieces relate. And I can look at aerial maps, because that used to be one of my specialities, or aerial photographs, and work stuff out that way. And in some ways it's very important, because some properties are just more affected by the Sanhe feng shui. And the master I learned from in Hong Kong, he said, no, get the building right, and it doesn't matter what happens in the rooms.
Yeah.
Now, I wouldn't agree with that. You still need to use the Sanya and Flying Star inside to improve the feng shui even better.
Perfect. And when you have a project, imagine somebody comes to you and say, okay, I got this piece of land, okay? What you will ask for?
Okay.
How you start a consultation?
If with any consultation, I need to go and look, because for a while I tried doing remote consultations, and the client would say, "Oh, it's a perfect piece of land. It's square, blah blah blah." And when I go and see it, I'd see that there's a swamp at the back or something. And clients cannot see these things. You have to go and look with feng shui eyes. So I don't do any distant feng shui anymore. You've got to go, you've got to look, you've got to walk around. I'll give you one example. I was doing the feng shui on a building in London, which was a middle-sized insurance company. And the consultant who worked on it before changed the painting inside, changed the color, changed the position of the desk. But still, the feng shui was not good. So the first thing I did after taking the facing direction and that was to actually walk around the building. And in walking around the building, I realized that the main entrance actually faced a graveyard. And the tomb that was closest actually had a huge skull and crossbones on it. So it was ultimately yin. So the building was breathing in the yin effect of the grave. So my advice was simple. Change the front door to around the corner. The owner said, but that's going to cost us about £100,000 to do. I said, it'll be money well spent. So reluctantly, he made the change. And the position of this insurance company in the pecking order of insurance companies, new business, rose immediately a considerable distance, and they were happy. The point is not that I'm good at what I do. The point is that I look at the outside, I look at the exterior, I check other things rather than the interior of feng shui. So your original question was what?
Yeah.
What was the question?
Well, how you do feng shui? What's happening in the? Some people do nowadays fashion to do. Well, we can talk about that.
Okay.
I asked a question because now there is a fashion to do remote feng shui. No.
Yeah.
People get, for example, the Qimin Dunjia. Feng shui, and they say, they plot the chart, they say, oh, here there is a problem, here there is a problem, oh, this is the qi mouth, qi comes from here, and they don't go to the way, to the sites to see.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's a, I don't say remote view that don't help, but I'm sure you need to go to the places and see what is happening. It's not enough to receive a location, a Google map, and
yes, it doesn't matter how many photographs the client takes. They will never always look at the right thing. You know, there'll be drainage lines which they won't photograph because they're not immediately obvious. There will be Sha Qi lines which may not be obvious. It's not always at the end of a T junction that you have Sha Qi. There are other places. I have done such projects once or twice, but it was never very satisfactory. I mean, maybe other masters can do remote feng shui, but I certainly can't.
Well, this is about experience, no? This is and one of the things is transmitting the experience, no? Is that's why we have radio and radio program, because talking to people who has knowledge, they sometimes give some trickies or sometimes some tricks.
Not
some tricks, sorry. My English is quite crappy, but anyhow, I enjoy a lot.
No, I understand exactly what you mean.
And sometimes it's interesting to hear how people work because it's an inspiration for the new people who is starting in the feng shui way, no?
Yeah.
The feng shui works. Yeah.
And sometimes when you've got a new client, something surprising will turn up. You know, you must ask for history.
Yeah.
You must ask, for example, you get the birth dates of everybody in the family, but has this particular child had illness? Is this child difficult at school? And you can relate that to the star patterns, but you can also relate it sometimes to something immediately outside the window of their bedroom. There can be a Sha Qi afflicting them.
Yeah.
And you won't know that if you're miles away. I like Google Earth Maps, but they're not perfect because they're usually the Earth photographs are shot at an angle, so the top of the building isn't exactly above where the bottom of the building is, if that makes sense. If you're lucky enough to get a perfectly vertical shot, then it's better, and it will show you some things that you wouldn't have otherwise seen. But you've got to walk around the building. You've got to check everything. And then if you're doing detailed sanhe, you need to find the water mouth. And sometimes the water mouth will be miles away, and you need to walk down the water courses. Like the old feng shui masters would spend months perhaps wandering around the hills looking for a grave site. Well, thank God I don't do that. And in fact, the demand for grave feng shui is not great in Europe. It's still in demand here, but more in Malaysia than Singapore, because Singapore is running, well, it's not running out of land, but it doesn't have a lot of flexibility in its burial sites.
Do you do grave feng shui?
Not anymore, no.
You used to do?
I used to do, usually with somebody else. As Yap Ching Hai once said, I gave up yin feng shui because I couldn't take the smell anymore. Which was extremely honest of him. Second burial sometimes, you know, exhumation and then reburying. But there's a lot of rubbish talked about that. I mean, bones will sometimes be buried in a jar. What's the facing of the jar? There is no facing. It's the facing of the skull. But anyway, to a new practitioner in Europe, this information is not really much use.
No. In Europe, it's difficult to do the great feng shui because, I mean, you cannot go to the mountain, choose a place and bury your grandfather in any place because you get arrested.
Oh, well,
at least in Italy, if I get a piece of land in the mountain and I put my grandfather there, police come and pick me up.
Well,
I need to go to the graveyard.
I should confess something that maybe you should cut out later is that I buried my first wife in the mountains in Essex in southern England. Because I owned the land, and my view was, what I do on my land is my business.
This is here, or in some countries can be okay, but in Italy it's quite complicated. No, you cannot do many things.
Okay, I believe you.
Actually, if I want to move a windows or move a door, I cannot do it.
Well, then you must have a classical and old building, yes?
Yeah, we got classic. I live in Florence, in the city center, and...
Now, that I can understand.
Yeah.
Florence is so beautiful, I'm sure there are regulations about moving
your
front door.
Regulations is, front door you cannot touch, you cannot tilt doors, you cannot move a windows, you cannot paint... well, painting is not about function, but outside building in different colors of the rest of the buildings.
Yes, you couldn't have a pink and purple apartment in Florence.
No. I can paint inside different colors. Sometimes I can move a wall inside, but not every time. Also, I cannot have a barbecue in the in the terrace.
That is very restrictive. But I can understand in central Florence why that should be the case.
And outside Florence, in the countryside, sometimes it's difficult to do, okay? Because you cannot... I have a property outside Florence, and you cannot, for example, I cannot add a room.
All right.
I cannot move the windows because it's less than 8 meters from the neighbor. Okay? And it's complicated,
Well, I had an old chateau, but it was in the middle of many fields in France, away from everybody else.
That's nice.
So I didn't ask permission. I don't own it anymore, so there's no problem for me anymore. But if I'd asked permission, I'd probably be told no. So I just did it.
Yeah, this is sometimes this is interesting because, for example, I solve many of my problems, feng shui problems, with Shuang Kong Dawa.
All right.
Okay, because this I don't need to move too many things. You have hexagrams, you activate the hexagrams, you play with the setup of the hexagram, and that's perfect, okay?
But of course,
and if you tilt the door 2 centimeters, nobody sees it.
No, that is true. But that is always difficult because getting such an exact measurement on a low pan is very hard.
Well, I solve the problem in this way.
Laser low
my
pan?
My background is architect.
If
I measure by laser and I draw, it's exactly the house. If I have, for example, 3 meters, 28 centimeters,
yeah,
I pass to the computer.
Oh, okay. So you can use trigonometry to get the exact angle.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
And I do, for example, I have Luopan inside the computer. And when I pass my Luopan on the AutoCAD, I use Rhinoceros, that is another software, but it's like AutoCAD, the CAD for design. When I plus the, when I put the Luopan, I know exactly where is the Yao.
So your profession as architect is great for Sanyuan, for Shangkong Dagua. Yeah. My profession as geographer is great for San
Jose. That's good. Well, and I will tell you something funny. I did in Malaysia the first course of Shangkong Dagua. Okay? And the master explained how to do this, this, and the other to have some effects. Okay, I keep in touch with the other guys of the course. Nobody has results.
That's a bit disturbing.
This was totally disturbing for them. I have results.
Okay, and your secret is?
Well, my colleague says that my English is so bad that I misunderstand something, and that's why it's working.
Ah.
And I explain them that no, it's I use computers, lasers, and I know what is the Yao.
Oh,
and I don't get floor plans from the clients. I go and measure my floor plans.
Do your own.
Yeah. Because I had the experience to have floor plans from the clients, and the walls are not in the same position. Okay?
Yeah.
In the floor plan they give me from
Is wrong.
It's wrong.
Yes.
80% is wrong.
Oh, my God.
How do you know it? If you go and measure, you know it.
It just proves you have got to go there. You can't rely upon second-hand or third-hand information.
No, you need to go and measure this. If you use, it's depending what do you use, but if you use, for example, something that you need to be precise, you need to go and measure.
So it makes you wonder what the old masters did to get their Yao measurement exactly right.
Well, before was a little bit more simple because the houses were square, squarish.
Yeah.
The houses were simple.
Yes.
No many things inside.
And the houses didn't have lots of metal hanging
around.
They're
not metal, because you put the Luopan on the door. And
and you can take the reading.
This is one of the things that's funny. You put like 1 meter from the floor, and you have 45 degrees.
Yeah.
You put 75, a little bit upper, and you have 50. You put down, I have 30. This is one of the things that I say, please change the door. This is one of the complicated stuff. And one of the things is, if you work with computers and lasers and Luopan, this is easy. With trigonometry, know what is the Yao. Okay? Actually, when you put a digital Luopan on the digital floor plan, okay, you know that the Yao is 1 meter from the wall. Okay, imagine you have a corner.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
From the corner is 1 meter.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And this is easy because you can measure on the computer and then go to the house and say, move 1 meter, here's the Yao.
Excellent.
Yeah, this is how.
So I should be interviewing you, shouldn't I?
No. I had some practice because I enjoy to do things.
I knew one master in London who didn't have the access to that kind of equipment, so he experimented on his own house, and he moved his door probably every month by a fraction, until finally he got the alignment he needed.
He got the alignment he wanted.
But the carpentry looked like absolute shit.
It's happening. this is the way I work. This is good for to have results with Shangkong Dagua. That you need to have precising. You need to locate the hexagram in the house or the yard.
And the thing about results is when you've got it, it comes pretty rapidly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
10 days, a week, 2 weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
You hear some consultants say, oh, well, in 6 months your luck will improve in this area, and that's rubbish.
Yeah.
You get an immediate result from
I have one experience with one of my friends that he has no job anymore.
Mm.
It was 3-4 years ago. We activate something in his house, okay? And after 2 days, people start to call him. He's a chef, and he go to your home and cook in your home.
Okay? Oh, right.
And after 3 days, he start to have jobs again, no? People call for inviting to cook in other people's home for parties and so on. And he was so happy. Okay? And his son take out the plug and throw down all the setup, all the feng shui. Because you need to put some water and, you know, there is moving water.
Why did his child do that?
He had 3 years old.
Oh, three years old.
That's he was a kid who would take out.
And so I can guess what happened next.
What's happening? No more clients. Okay, he called me again. After 1 week, say, Alex, client is not calling. He said, what's happened? Oh, my kid unplugged the water motor for the stuff you did. And he said, okay, we can calculate another date who is combining with you, and we plug a game. Okay, we plug a game, and after 3-4 days, people start to call, okay? And after 2 weeks, he called me again, and he says, do you know what's happened? I was cooking a lot. I put microwave, I put this, I put the other, and electricity jump out.
Oh. So you needed to recalculate for
it. No, I didn't calculate anymore. I said, this is your destiny. Yeah. I'm so sorry, this is your destiny. Yeah. Otherwise, I will stay every 3 weeks going to his home to do something. And this is interesting because it's... when that you say it is right, when you do some setups and they work correctly, okay, you see the result really fast. Okay, I have another experience that I have a bread and breakfast in Florence, and last October until 5 October we have fully booked. After 5 October, nothing. I mean, I didn't have booked for 3 October. I discovered we don't have booked for all October. No?
Yeah.
And the funny stuff was, I used the Sangha method, okay, the internal Sangha.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, to pull out the chi.
Right.
Okay?
Mm.
And, after 3-4 days, booking start to come. This is how it's working. No? Normally it's quite fast. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. In Singapore, I work mostly for Chinese clients because they understand what it can do. They're not asking me for a quick lesson in what it can do. But if I work for Western clients, chances are you tell them to do 3 or 4 things, they will do one thing and not the others. Mm. They will do 2 things but not the others. And then they say, oh, it didn't work, you know. So I find it much easier to work with local clients.
Well, I think working with Chinese is they will follow you. Yeah. Without many questions.
Yeah, they're more demanding initially. I want this, I want that. Yeah. But that's good. You need to know what needs to be changed. You can't just make them win the lottery or something, which is the usual reaction from a Western client. Can I win the lottery? No, you can't.
But Italy is quite special in that. The people come and say, look, I want you help me to be rich, but then I will pay you only after I get rich.
I used to do some jobs on the basis that don't pay me until it starts working.
Yeah.
And that's all right, but it's no good to have because they will never be rich enough.
Yeah,
they
will.
You know, $1 million later, they're not rich enough. They still haven't paid you. No, no, no. There's a story about one feng shui master in Malaysia who I won't name. He did the feng shui, and the client failed to pay him. And the client succeeded. So he just reversed the feng shui because it was from external stuff.
Yeah.
Client became poor again, and the client was really upset. But he said, well, you didn't pay me, so
it's okay.
What can I do? Yeah. But that might be an apocryphal story, but it reflects reality.
Yeah.
You know.
This is sometimes I remember a conference where a master talked on someone in Western countries in London say, I don't believe in that. Okay?
Which conference, if I can ask?
What?
Which conference was this?
It was a Joyab conference.
All right. Okay.
So I don't believe that. And Yap says, okay, I will help you to activate the 3 killings, the Wu-Wan, and so on. Then, if something wrong happens in your life, you will trust me. It was so funny because the guy who was in the seminar said, no, Now you believe, eh?
That's a hell of a threat, isn't it?
Yeah, this is basically.
Another sort of similar thing. There was a conference in Taiwan, and one of the Americans at the conference, the master talking, knew his stuff, and he said, "Now I will tell you a little bit about yin feng shui, about grave feng shui." One of the Americans stood up and said, "We don't want to hear about that. That's nothing to do with feng shui. We only want to hear about interior houses." And he said, "No, actually, it's a large percentage of feng shui. And tomorrow I will prove it." So tomorrow he wheeled in a large trolley. 80% of the Chinese books on the trolley are about yin feng shui. 20% are about yang feng shui.
Yeah, yeah.
But I still think she was not interested.
Okay, let's talk about books. Which one is your last book that you enjoy writing?
Okay, so I've written probably 12 or 15 books on feng shui. Let me just talk about my first book first. So my first book I wrote in 1976, which was immediately after I'd been working with the old master in Hong Kong. And I offered it to Routledge, and they just took my typescript and produced a book from that. Now, that book is pretty rare now, but it later became the Living Earth Manual of Feng Shui. And there I was free to talk about the connection between geography and San He and mountains and rivers and so forth, but not very much about internal feng shui. So that's one aspect. My most complicated book was The Guide to the Feng Shui Compass, which is a really solid piece of work, because what I did was I got examples of Lo Pan from all around the world. I have a large private collection of Lo Pan, including Qing Dynasty Lo Pan, and also photographs from various research institutes, some from Chinese university museums. They were rather hard to get. They were not very helpful about that. And then I went through and dated them. And you can date a Lo Pan quite often from certain rings which change over a period of time, have different epochs. And then I analyzed every single ring, what the ingredients on the ring were, and figured out roughly what, and sometimes exactly, which dynasty they were introduced to the compass. Because the initial Lo Pan were very simple. They would just have the stems and branches. People who say that the oldest ones would have hexagrams or trigrams, it's not true. The very early ones sometimes had the 8 trigrams, but they were just being used as an indication of northwest, east, south, etc., not in any other...
For formulas.
No. Formula on the Lo Pan only came in after the 12th, 13th century. So my early compasses, my early Lo Pans, or photographs of early Lo Pans, are all just... The stems, the branches, the three corner, they're trigrams now, but they were still just the earth.
They had the 24 mountains.
Yeah, but they were, and the mountains, of course, which is just the yang and yin versions of the elements. The elemental directions are very important. And then once San Yuan started, then the number of different Lo Pan designs increased and went a little bit mad. So in the Ming Dynasty, it was still fairly straightforward, but the Qing, they wanted to put everything on the Lo Pan. And then you get some modern ones now, which you've got entire flying star charts on the Lo Pan, which is just ridiculous, you know. You get the direction and you do the chart on a piece of paper. You don't need it on the actual Lo Pan. And there are strange Lo Pans that have three moving discs and things like that. So I photographed these and I documented them all in this book. And then I went back to the Chinese classics, and there are about 5 classics which actually go through each of the rings and document what they are. So I translated for my own benefit. I can read classical Chinese, the ring descriptions from each of these classics, so that I could see when certain rings disappeared or certain rings came in. So that way I could work out the dating. Mm-hmm. So I built myself a huge spreadsheet with all this information. Condensed version is in the book. Mm-hmm. Now, this is far too much information, but it means that if you're using a particular ring and you want to see how old is it, who used it, how did they use it, I didn't actually put all of the how to use it in there because I was documenting it first. I plan a second book which will have the actual methods for each of the rings, but I never got around to finishing that. So that's the book that I quite like. But I did also some glossy books, and glossy book publishers, they just want glossy book information. They don't want detail.
Yeah.
Their idea of Chinese astrology is simply the 12 animals.
Mm-hmm. The bats.
The publisher's idea doesn't even include the elements. Okay. But yes, so stuff on the bats. So I haven't done a lot of that. I did a software program to calculate that, which I'm pleased to say has been pirated. And I actually went to a pirate CD shop in Malaysia, because it's semi-legal in Malaysia. It's not legal in Singapore. And I saw my program with my name on it being advertised, and so I in fact bought a couple of copies. I didn't say anything to the guy. It's not his fault.
Well, in some way, he's participating.
He is, yeah. But the guy selling it is not his fault. It's somewhere in the back room. There's the guy doing the duplication.
The guy who's selling is trying to earn some money to bring food home.
Yeah, exactly. So the law in Malaysia is actually, if you're using programs that have been pirated, if you use it privately, it's legal. If you use it in your business, it's illegal.
Okay, that's funny.
So I didn't quite know where my ripped-off one went, but anyway, I didn't do anything about it.
You could tell, use only at home.
I really couldn't care less. They can go and duplicate it and proceed with it, because things have moved on since then. It's probably time to do a more complicated program.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the programmer I worked with, he's no longer involved. He's doing other things. He's, strange enough, he's making Japanese gardens in England.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And, of course, you know that the rules of the Japanese gardens are derived from Tang Dynasty Chinese gardens.
Oh, wow.
So a lot of the Tang Dynasty gardening texts have been lost, but you can reconstruct what they did by looking at some of the Japanese texts, because the Japanese document their gardens very thoroughly.
Wow.
So, in fact, it was only last year I made my second trip to Japan, because there was a feng shui conference there organized by the association, by the IFSA.
Mm-hmm.
So it was actually good to go and see some of the real gardens rather than just looking at them.
In Berlin, there is a Japanese, there's a Chinese garden and Japanese garden. The Chinese garden is quite, it's nice, beautiful, but the game between yin and yang sometimes is not so clear. Okay?
More,
yin spaces and yang spaces.
More clear in the Japanese.
The Japanese is much more better.
Yeah, the Japanese have developed and worked on it.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have lived in the Edo period and Kyoto to see some of that. I visited Kyoto, but there's not a lot there that's left from that period.
Yeah, well, I used to have a Japanese wife.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for a long time. And they call it Fusui, or Fusui.
Yeah, yeah, they do.
And at the time I was married with this lady, she knows a bit about feng shui, and I didn't have any clue what feng shui was. And I remember, one of the things I remember is we went to see some places, and she said, this is not good Fusui.
You said, he said yes.
He said, well, what were you talking about? And she started to talk me about Fusui. And one time I went to Argentina in holidays, and I saw someone who sell a video about feng shui, and I got the video and I start to understand a little bit what my ex-wife was talking about.
Right.
Then I met a Chinese, after divorcing, I met a Chinese lady, and I told her, look, I can travel to China to visit you anytime you like, but I need to find something to do to deduct from taxes.
Right.
Because otherwise it's, much more cheaper, no? Because I mean, and she said, okay. She said, okay, you study architecture, okay. You go to study feng shui, she said. I said, what? No, don't worry. I organize for you. And she organized my studying feng shui. And I study with, and she translates for me.
Right.
Okay, because these
lucky,
guys
study. Lucky man, yeah.
Yeah, I was so lucky, you know, because. And I remember the second course I did in Beijing with the old lady. And she said, the lady say I was doing feng shui for generals and for Mao Zedong.
Yeah.
And I say, no, it's impossible, because in Mao Zedong, as we read in the books, there is no feng shui.
He's a materialist, yeah, but he wasn't.
Yeah. And the funny stuff was that she started to show pictures. Of course, I didn't know what these people were, because I don't know anything about China, or at least I didn't know anything about China. And this lady who translated for me, who was my girlfriend for a few years, she said, he recognized the people in the pictures. And they said, no, this is this was the old staff from Chinese government, no? And then she was explaining that she was working with the Chinese government in feng shui, divination, and all this stuff.
Oh, that's quite interesting, because one of the most serious masters in China, who passed away just a year or so ago, Master Li, he had been an army man. I'm not sure whether he was a general, but he was definitely high up. And he'd produced a book which covered details of 53 of the rings. So he was the modern resource that I used before moving back and looking at the classics to work out what the rings did. So I know from that certainly the army was interested.
The army was interested,
yeah.
And then I studied. She bring me to Malaysia on holidays. Anytime I went on holidays with her, there is a course around to deduct from taxes. This is how I started.
Excellent.
Then she's no longer still coming to study or talking. This is funny. That's how it started.
Yes, I think some of my friends said I should have married a Chinese girl, but I didn't.
Your wife is coming from?
My wife is Indian.
Okay.
And technically Assamese. But,
yeah. Well, if you marry the Chinese one, you will have more opportunity.
Yeah. My verbal Chinese would have improved. But,
yeah.
Rather than my written Chinese.
But you cannot change wife because of that.
No.
Please, don't do this
stuff. That would be bad, yes. No, I'm perfectly happy as I am.
That's nice. Okay, we can go for the... I want to explore and know more about your books. What other books did you write?
Okay, I did a book on flying star feng shui quite a long time ago. I think 2001 or something like that. When
is
it
the blue one?
Well, it's got a yellow cover.
Oh, yellow cover.
With a pakwa on the cover.
Yeah, okay.
Many editions of it.
Okay.
I quite like writing that book, because it's one way of... It's in fact, one of the best ways to get your ideas in order is to actually have to present them and teach them.
Yep.
It's the fastest way to learn. So I did that when I lived in London, and subsequently... I published Advanced Flying Star Feng Shui, which is really the same book, but plus a lot of additional information, and showing how it connects up with eight mansion feng shui. And then in the back, I put charts which had much more detail in them, and they are turned in the direction of the house, whereas so you don't have to, on the intercardinal charts, turn them around on paper. They're already set for you, together with the replacement star charts. Mm-hmm. So quite a lot of useful charts at the back.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
And
Do you, for example, this is how many? You tell me, you have 16 books on feng shui.
Yeah, about that.
About the 16 books.
I mean, some of the others. There was a red book which was published in London, which actually sold close to 100,000 copies, but it's not around anymore. And it was really a step-by-step through one I did with Dolan Kindersley, so it is the KISS guide, Keep It Simple guide to feng shui.
I saw it somewhere.
And they spent a lot of money on design, so it looks very pretty. And there was another red book published by Paragon, which was simply feng shui, the traditional oriental, etc. And that's quite good for a beginner because the pictures are very clear and it starts off with what is qi and it goes through and finally finishes up with approaching flying star but not getting into flying star. So that's a good beginner's book. And then one book I saw recently, a friend of mine who lives in Czechoslovakia showed a Czechoslovakian version of the same book with a white cover, which I'd never seen before. And of course my publisher had never told me about it before. So that was good. That was good to see, and he said nice things in Czechoslovakian about it.
Did you got a copy?
No, I haven't got a copy.
Yeah, I should.
At one stage I was collecting copies in other languages, but I've now got books in about 27 different languages. I mean, in Italian, three of my books on feng shui, at least three books, probably more now. One or two books on magic are in Italian. But the publishers, unless you ask them, they never send you a copy, or they send the copy to the last English publisher, who then just files them. They don't bother sending them to the authors. So whenever I travel, I look on the bookshelves for books by me, and quite often buy one or two. One of my books, the first feng shui book, was translated into Indonesian, and I found it on the shelf of a library in Kuala Lumpur, where I was looking at what was produced locally, and then I go, oh my God, this looks familiar. Oh, I know him. That was my book, yeah.
When you go to the country who they don't speak English, they will ask you, how do you spell? And you can give the passport. We please use this name.
Yeah. Talking about other books in other countries, we were talking earlier about Japanese feng shui being called fusui. Well, Korean feng shui is called pungsui.
Pungsui.
And the interesting thing about both Japan and Korea is that they derive a lot of their culture from China. They hate to say that, but if you're in Japan, you can see that approximately between one-third and two-thirds of the characters are Chinese characters. So you can't pronounce them. Well, I can't. But you can get the general gist
of it.
So when I was in Japan, I was amazed. I'm looking at street signs. Yeah, I know what that says, you know. How about that? But you try and say it, and of course the pronunciation is completely
different. Yeah.
It's a different sound word altogether. But getting back to Korea, one of the first PhD theses on feng shui was done by a Korean quite some time back, and it's still quite good. But they've in Korea, they've inherited a lot of the classical Chinese texts, which haven't been corrupted as they have partially in China. So I tell you a little anecdote. I was in Taipei in Taiwan about, I don't know, 30 years ago, and I was looking down Snake Alley. Snake Alley is a covered way with a lot of snake restaurants. Now, I should add that I don't like the idea of eating snakes. I don't particularly like snakes. But I'd been told there's a feng shui shop down there. So I'm walking down amongst all these cages of snakes. And yes, there was a feng shui shop. So I went in and talked to the owner. And then he realized who I was, and he realized that he'd seen some of my books and so forth. So I bought some things in Chinese and so forth. And before I left, he said, I have a present for you. And so he pulls out from under the counter four books in Korean. And I go, no, I can't read Korean. And he goes, yes, these are meant for you. And so, okay, I decide, shall I pay? No, these are a gift. So I took them. I went back to the hotel and I looked inside. And lo and behold, at the back and inside the text itself, there were Chinese equivalents. So mm-hmm. I could read the bits, but not, of course, the commentary. But some of the best illustrations you've ever seen on compass divisions and San Yuan were in this book. They'd really been done superbly. So that was very pleasing, and discovered quite a few things by reading that book. Mm-hmm. So it just came, it was a piece of happenstance. Yeah. But it did tell me that the Koreans do have access to some of the Tang Dynasty feng shui, which has not really survived in China. In fact, in mainland China, it's probably true that Mao Zedong used feng shui, but on a day-to-day basis, mainland China is not a place to go to find a feng shui master, because the Cultural Revolution of 1966 to 76 either ejected or killed or banished most of the old feng shui masters.
Yeah, they're supposed to hide a bit.
Yeah, which is why some of the better masters are now in Taiwan or Hong Kong or Singapore.
Malaysia,
particularly Malaysia, yeah. So that's quite interesting. China is almost seems ashamed of its heritage. Although they are now running university courses on some aspects of feng shui.
Yeah, they don't call feng shui. It's called something. I remember in Tongji, in Shanghai, they call territory integration.
Environmental. Because they can only do it in context of architecture or in the context of integrating houses in the environment. Yeah. So you get a lot of talk about environment, and actually feng shui is not about environment. Feng shui is about the geographical environment, but it's about qi and luck and things like that. So they've sort of gone super scientific, but almost in the wrong direction.
Yeah. Well, this I remember I saw in Tongji, I got one of the books that people used to study, and it's so funny, it was about feng shui garden, but they didn't say feng shui garden, it was yin and yang in the garden.
Yeah,
that actually was interaction of the space between yin and yang. You know? And they say something like how to use the yin and yang to discover the views. For example, in Chinese garden, sometimes you see water and you walk through the water by stones. And they say, we put these stones because you need to look your feet where you put your feet. When this finish and you cross the river, you need to take up the head and discover the view. Okay? And it was really interesting, because one of the things the book is talking is how to manipulate the sensation of the people going through the feng shui garden. And this is, when you go to, before we were talking about the Berlin gardens, no? And one of the things you find is exactly that, because you, for example, are walking in a place that is narrow, suddenly open, and you discover a view. Then you need to, that is, could be young. Then you go to walk in a place that you need to look your feet, and you discover again a place where you sit, and you find, you start to work with the sensations, because you have a smell, it has sound, and they have a view. And I start to stimulate the sense. And this book is talking about that, but they don't call feng shui. Also, if they explain how to integrate formulas or whatever with the living space, with the outdoor space. No? I'm talking to one of the teachers of the Tongji. They say, this is feng shui.
This is funny. Yes, but they can't say that too loudly. So, for example, a number of conferences that have happened in mainland China, which have been about feng shui, usually bill themselves as Yi Jing conventions.
Yeah, Yi Jing conventions.
I've talked in some of the Yi Jing conventions. And we held 3 years back, the International Feng Shui Association held its convention in Shanghai. And I think we were lucky, because very shortly after it, President Xi more or less said things like, this is not going to happen again. Not to us, but publicly, you know, there'll be a crackdown on old superstitions and so forth.
Well, actually, things are changed. I was in Chengdu not Chengdu, it's I was in the south Changsha. And I went to see some temples, and outside the temples there was people advertising feng shui. And there was a temple, and walking around the temple there is people who do divination and people who write, "We do feng shui."
Well, that's how it used to be, and that has how it's still in, like, Wong Tai Sin Temple in Hong Kong. Has got a long covered passageway that curls around, and it's just full of people doing feng shui and divination.
And I remember I was tired of walking, and I sit in a place, and I was a guy who started to talk to me. Okay, and after talking for half an hour, I said, I don't understand what you say. He said, Ipai Yuan. You hand the Yuan for talking. He said, but I don't understand. Ipai Yuan.
So did you pay him?
Well, actually, it's I paid him. He was working also, if I don't understand.
Yeah, okay. he worked. He
got,
your ear got the benefit of it, even if your understanding did not.
I didn't catch what he said, but it's okay, then you just can go. And but now you can see that you cannot publish. I never saw published in the newspaper, okay? But I saw... I participated in Shanghai to some conferences, or I remember there was many years ago in Shanghai there was an Indian lady who then moved to Singapore because the husband was working in Shanghai.
I think I know who you're talking about.
Aparna. Yes. And she published in Foreigner Association or something.
She's a member of the IFSA, which I, along with five or six other masters, actually formed in 2003, and we registered in 2006.
Yeah,
and we've been having a conference every year. I think we're up to the 15th convention now.
Now it's a little bit more open, no? To say feng shui or to practice feng shui. But still people, for that I saw on the trip, I have been 14 times in China, and for the things I saw, it's more like many people still get like a superstition, okay? Also Chinese people get it as a superstition. When you talk to upper class or more rich people, they will consider it more seriously, okay? But if you talk to normal people, they
still remember what their grandmother said.
Consider it
a superstition. Yes.
Yeah.
I had one or two Chinese clients where they were happy for me to come and do their feng shui, but I mustn't talk to grandmother. I mustn't say what I'm doing. Because any member of the family who's become a dedicated Christian, nothing against Christians, but people who recently converted sometimes a lot more stringent than others.
You say you do courses. When is your next course and what you will do?
November. It will be in Singapore, and it's held alongside the International Feng Shui Convention, which will be held here. I can't remember which hotel, but there's fengshui-convention.com.
Okay. What do you think about
we'll have the details when it's organized.
Life palace.
And so I will do a couple of days before.
Divination is fine.
I prefer to actually make changes.
I still seem to try and see what's going to happen.
It's been a long time.
My approach to life
one
is
more
proactive,
lateral,
taking into account other.
I know other
my wife, for example, is very good at tarot divination.
Oh, wow.
And I quite often ask her to give me some answers. But my personal approach is it's much better to decide what you want to happen, and then you either use feng shui or magic to make it happen.
To make it happen.
Yeah.
Do you use, Tong Hao? No Chinese magic?
Oh, you mean Taoist magic, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I know a little bit of that, but... quite a bit of that's fairly dark.
Oh, you're fairly dark, eh?
Yes. I know some of the Bomos in Malaysia, and then they have spirits who work for them, because that is, in fact, the essence of magic, is to have
a spirit
working for you. It's not, you know, I would like this to happen you actually got to invoke a spirit, mm-hmm. command it, and set it off to do a particular task. Mm-hmm. And then these guys, their spirits are so close to reality that sitting with them sometimes out of the corner of my eye, I can see one or two of them. Mm-hmm. Turn the head and look at them full face, and they've gone.
This is magnetism.
Yeah. But these are guys who work at magic as a profession. Mm-hmm. So from where I lived in Johor, you walk down the street and there'd be a Dr. Shiji, which is a dentist, and then there'd be somebody who did carpentry, and then there'd be a sign with some very obvious sigils on it and the Chinese words for magic on it. Mm-hmm. And this guy's a professional magician. And so I got to know him quite well. Mm-hmm. And these guys are result-orientated. Mm-hmm. You know, they can't have clients going around and bad-mouthing them, because in a closed community, it soon gets out. Mm-hmm. He does the stuff, it works. He does the stuff, it doesn't work. And so the ones that have got established practices, it works 90% of the time. 10%, they've probably got a few problems. But mm-hmm. And so I thought that was fascinating, because it's a long time since in Europe there were professional magicians who were game to actually put up their shingle, to put up their put up, this is what I do, you know, their brass plate, as it were. There's been a, you know, 2,000 years, not 2,000 years, less than that, of suppression of magic in Europe. Yeah. But Chinese magic and the Burma magic's been flourishing for a long time.
I hear that in Thailand there is magician is quite popular, no?
Yes.
Yeah, they are quite open to say, okay, I'm a magician.
Yeah.
Let me, what do you need, pay me and I do for you.
That's right. And you know, if it doesn't work, you give them hassle, so they make sure it works. Whereas the Western attitude is still very skeptical about it. Or it's worse than that, it's the New Age magic. You know, I wish for this and I paint it on my mirror and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I put love on the water.
And it doesn't work. Or if it does, it's a psychological effect upon the person doing it. Yeah. So that might work. But, you know, if you really want something done, then you need to have a spirit that's bound and Forced to do the work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when you, for example, in some of the practices like Qimen, you need to order to the spirit to do something, no? Mm. Like, you know, Qimen Dunja has a chief, Nanghaven, some that we call deities. When you order that something, is the spirit moving?
Yeah, you're talking about Shen, yes?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the interface between magic and feng shui.
Okay.
And yes, if you are really commanding a particular shen to do some particular job, yes, they go and do it. Okay. There's minor difficulties, like sometimes you find that if you need them to work across the water, in other words, in another country, that presents problems and difficulties. But
why?
I don't know. But it's just my experience that getting them to work across the large bodies of water presents them with difficulties. Maybe that's just me. Mm. But and there are a few other things. And you've got to get your timing right.
I mean, you need to get your magician in your own continent.
Yes. Of course, you could say that in Malaysia, we are on the same landmass as Italy.
Yeah.
But somehow there's an awful lot of ocean in between, and so it is a lot more difficult to get events to happen in another country.
Uh-huh. Or you need to tell them what airline to take to go to the next country. Please, tonight, Lufthansa is flying from Singapore to Spain
at
midnight. Get on time. That can be nice.
That is a nice idea. But
getting
in
business star, business class seat.
Travel first class. Yes, nobody will even notice.
Don't go with pilot, don't disturb them. That's okay.
Yeah, don't flick any of the switches in the pilot's room. We're joking.
Well, I was was two weeks ago. I was talking to a spiritual guy who says that one of the things he says that anytime he flies on the or who go high altitudes with flying, he see many spirits on this on this stuff. No, and he says I feel them, and I don't like to fly too much because there is a lot of spirits going around.
In the Middle Ages, they used to talk about them as the sublunary spirits. In other words, the spirits that are beneath the moon but above the earth.
Yeah.
I can't say that I've experienced the same. General debilitation after a flight, yes, but not spirits.
When you command the spirit in the interface between feng shui and magic, okay, this is that we call elementaries, souls. Mm-hmm. Is people who pass away, or is
No, I don't think so. I know there are some people who consider these spirits are the ghosts or the remnants of somebody who's been living. But I think they're a different order of being. I think that the spirits have not ever probably been incarnated, or if they have, a very, very long time ago. But that's just my view. The rules of feng shui are better codified than the rules of magic.
Yeah. Okay. Next book. What are you working on?
Okay, well, I'm working on a book on magic.
Okay.
Which has a series of illustrations, drawings, which, if meditated upon, mm-hmm. along with the correct invocation, will supposedly enable you to learn a whole subject very rapidly. Mm-hmm. So this is a very practical book. It's a manuscript. It was written in 1225. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm working on at the moment. But this is not feng shui.
No, I get not. But you can have feng shui, okay? Go this direction and this time.
Yeah, well, with magic, direction is very important. Mm-hmm. Some of the grimoires have actually got very elaborate compasses. Mm-hmm. So the point is that you must always face the direction the spirit is coming from. I always thought it must be bad manners to have your back turned to the spirit when it arrives. But in fact, it's more than that. When you invoke, it's got to be in a particular direction, because they have geographical locations. But I don't really want to get into that.
Do you know about astronomy?
Yeah.
Okay, lichum. Normally the year for
spring.
Spring.
Lichun.
Okay. I'm curious about what you think about that, because this is many people say, okay, this lichun is 4 of February at midday, okay, in the woo hour, fourth hour, and they say use the same chart around the world. Do you think is correct?
No, because timing is local. I've seen people adjust their Patsu chart back to Beijing time, which is just ridiculous. Timing is local because feng shui is physical. It's the direction of the sun on that particular day. You know, if the sun's directly overhead, it's midday. Even if it's 3 o'clock in the morning in Beijing or something, that's irrelevant.
Yeah.
But that's... So, in different places around the world, you're going to have different timing for lichun. It's like a new moon or something will occur at a different time because the earth is faced in a different direction. It's physical. You've got to observe that. Does that answer the question or not quite?
Well, yeah, a little bit, because that I saw is every you know, when we study feng shui, you know, sometimes or astrology. Sometimes master comes, this year is this exactly time. And it's not every time the same. Now it's midday, but last year was 3 February at midnight or whatever.
And the time changes because the Western calendar is imperfect. The Western calendar with its 4 year and then there's a jump is not as accurate as the Chinese agricultural
calendar.
But
this corresponds to 15 degrees. Of the sun on Aquarius every year?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And this is a movement of the earth around the sun. It's a positioning of the planets.
Yes.
It means if we take this like an event, it's a planetary event.
Oh, that, so you're saying that it should be the same time?
No, I say that...
That measured by New York time or Beijing time will be different.
Of course.
Yes.
That I say is that...
Yeah, the instant happens for the planet.
Yeah, the instant happens for the planet.
And then you need to interpret that to the local time. Yeah.
And that is, for example, that in Beijing is midday, that actually in Los Angeles is not 4 of February, it's 3 of February.
It's the previous day.
Yeah, it's the previous day.
Yeah.
And you will have an annual chart that is different in every part of the world because the elements are changing, because the time is changing.
Yeah. And I mean, you have the same effect with Islam, which measures its lunar month from a particular date and a time when the moon can be seen above the horizon, etc., etc.
Yeah.
And that happens, and that's... For many years, people have realized that the calendars in India are going to be different from the calendars in Singapore, are going to be different from the calendars in... the same thing.
Yeah, it's the same thing. And it's mean, if you have a new annual chart for different cities, and you interact like a synastry from the country chart and the different annual chart...
Then it should be different. You can't expect...
The result is different.
Beijing doesn't have the same riots as Rome or France or whatever.
It's mean, the energy will be different for each country.
Yeah.
According where they are located. It means you can read the astrology for the country in a different way. Okay? It means if the chart say, oh, this year there is no money... for people, or it's not possible to get it, okay? It's not the same for every part of the world.
No, because that would be extraordinary, wouldn't it, if everybody's history was the same?
But I say that because many masters say, oh, this is the chart. In Italy, use the same chart, and London use the same chart, and in Los Angeles, the same chart.
They're just being lazy.
I guess so. Because I remember I saw a conference in Los Angeles a few days ago, no? I saw by internet, and they have the same chart that they have here in Malaysia or in Singapore. Okay? And I say, how come? Okay? And it means one is having the wrong chart.
Yeah. Well, all of them except one.
Also Beijing
is having the wrong chart.
Yeah, when I talk these kind of things with the people, not to know the opinion, people say, no, use the chart of Beijing, please. Yes. I say, why? I don't live in Beijing.
And then they say, this is what I was taught. And I hate that phrase.
Yeah.
Because...
They don't use the brain.
This is what is actually happening would be a more useful phrase, wouldn't it?
And also, because in Western astrology, you can change your fate...
By moving. Yes. This is astrocartography.
Astrocartography. We came back to the cartography.
Yes.
It means with Chinese astrology you should do the same.
Yeah.
It means you can locate which one of the charts is more beneficial for you.
Yeah.
And when the year starts, you get the impact of the place you benefit
You're actually
more.
Living in, yes.
Yeah. Or living.
Well, it's the same with houses. You know, your feng shui depends upon the house you live in. You move your house, and then things change for you.
Yeah.
So you move your city. Of course, things change for you as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the reasons I live in Singapore, apart from the fact of my wife, is
for the hot weather
and for the hot weather, the good food.
the movies are cheap.
Aye. And many other reasons. There's also astrocartography.
For astrocartography.
Yeah.
And you calculate by Chinese or Western?
Western astrocartography.
Western astrocartography.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for talking to us today. And how people can contact you?
Okay, so I have a website, which is sskinner.com. And also my books are sold by my publisher, which is Golden Horde. That's HOARD.com. So they can order books straight off those websites. Mm-hmm. Or indeed, most of my books are available on Amazon as well.
Okay.
Otherwise... you're asking about courses.
Yes.
I will be doing a course in Singapore at the same time as the IFSC, which is the International Feng Shui Association's conference. And that happens in early November in Singapore this year, 2019. And I will be doing classes before and after the conference.
Perfect.
No details available yet, but watch this.
We can tackle the audience to contact you, ask for books and for more information.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much to be with us today.
Thank you.